You are listening to And Press Play, written and recorded by James West.
Hello, and welcome back to And Press Play. For this special episode, entitled A Deeper Dive, I'll be taking albums by famous bands which are considered to be not very good or at the bottom of their catalogue in rankings and seeing whether they truly deserve those ratings. Now, first on the agenda is We Can't Dance by Genesis, their 1991 album and their last studio album with Phil Collins on lead vocals. Now, with Invisible Touch, Genesis' transition from prog rock to pop had been completed, and Invisible Touch had been a massive success around the world, but had also alienated many long-time Genesis fans who accused the band of selling out. When Genesis reconvened in 1990 for We Can't Dance, understandably there were high expectations. Indeed, Rutherford and Banks didn't expect Collins to return for this album, given how successful his solo career had been. Working from scratch, 12 songs made the final cut of this album, which ranged from 10-minute epics like Driving the Last Spike to 4-minute pop singles like I Can't Dance. Initial reception to this album was mixed, and reassessment decades later hasn't changed opinions of the album much. But does it deserve this much hate? Let's find out. The opening track on this album, No Son of Mine, has an incredibly creepy start with the ticking in the background, and it gives way to one of Genesis's most gloomy openings. Lyrically, this song is about the domestic abuse of a 15-year-old boy, and Collins's lyrics really show the desperation of the situation. Personally, this is one of my favourite songs on the album, as it's a good pop song despite the subject matter. Moving on to track two, we get Jesus He Knows Me, another great pop song and much more upbeat. Maybe because I spent a lot of time listening to this as a child, I'm softer on it, but it is very easy to sing along to, and I enjoy that the whole song is a caricature of televangelists. However, I do take the point that both of these modern topics aren't really what Genesis wrote about, and more what Phil Collins wrote about. But I'd argue that Collins does a much better job of handling modern day issues in music in the confines of Genesis than he does in his solo career, where I think his solo career kind of crosses the line a bit into a more of a preachy tone, whereas Genesis can confine it in the realms of a good song. But another strong song on the album. Next we come to Driving the Last Spike, which is probably the last great epic of Genesis. It's a 10-minute song about the role that the Irish navvies played in building Britain's railways. It's a powerful song. Musically, it starts off somber and slowly builds for the first 2 minutes before the drums and bass start kicking in. There are some rockier parts added, but it's not until 5.5 minutes in when Rutherford's guitar kicks in that the song reaches its emotional high. The mixture of drums, bass and guitar propel the listeners onwards, helped in no small part due to Collins's vivid lyrics of the conditions that the navvies worked in. The song ends on a climactic high with "showing no fear of what lies up ahead, they'll never see the likes of us again," ending what is a very poignant tribute to these men. The next song, I Can't Dance, is a mixed bag. I both love and hate this song. It is irritatingly simple at times, but there is something irresistibly fun about it. Again, another caricature, this time of models in jeans adverts in the early 90s. Ultimately, this song is all right, but it's easily the weakest of the first four songs. Moving on to Never a Time. Again, ultimately not a bad song. The first set of Rutherford's lyrics are sentimental, but in my opinion, it stays on the right side of the line. It's not excessively sentimental. It's about the breakup of a relationship and provides a welcome break in subject matter. It's another one that's grown on me over the years, and especially as none of the ones before have tackled relationships, it does feel a bit of a palate cleanser. Next, we have Dreaming While You Sleep. I like this song. It's about a driver who's involved in a hit-and-run accident and his guilt for not stopping at the scene of the crime. It's got an upbeat, creepy vibe to her, and I especially like the refrain of All My Life that opens the lines in the final two verses. It gives added emphasis about how the guilt will affect him for the rest of his life and how he will never be rid of it. Moving on to Tell Me Why, a a song which is a critique of the Gulf War, as well as other issues such as starvation. It's another song on this album that I've warmed to over the years. The chorus in particular shows a desperate optimism which stands out. Can you see that shaft of sunlight? You know, the images are quite distinct and quite vivid. Musically, it's good enough, but at this point, the synths are starting to blend into each other, and it's a bit too long. You could shave a minute off it quite happily. Then we come to Living Forever, which, in my opinion, is the last great song on the album. The guitar and drums are a lot more present on this song than the synths, and it makes the song feel sharper and more awake, and makes it stand out. Lyrically, it's about diets and lifestyles. The next fad always promises that you'll live longer. Now we come to Hold On My Heart. Yes, this is a Phil Collins song. Yes, there's got to be a ballad. This song is hard work for me. It's boring, it's soppy, and in my opinion, it's a good 30 seconds too long. His vocal performance here is quite good though. Way of the World is the next track. In my opinion, the most forgettable song on the album. It's a bit more lively than Hold On My Heart, but it feels like effectively Tell Me Why Part 2, and that song didn't need a Part 2. Since I Lost You, I'm very mixed on this song. On the plus side, it's musically different, there's a lot more piano, and it's a very touching tribute to Eric Clapton's child, Connor. On the flip side, it feels very out of place on this album. But due to the way it handles quite a delicate subject in a very sensitive way, I will give this song a passing mark. Finally, we come to Fading Lights. Oddly enough, this song reminds me of Steve Hackett's Shadow of the Hierophant, because they are both very similar in the sense of how the song is structured. The latter half of Fading Lights I do quite enjoy. The music is quite good, but the song is just too long, and having Collins sing the final verse kills the momentum. Basically, there's a nice, fast-paced bit of music all the way till about 9 minutes in, and then Collins sings the final verse and the music cuts out, and it just arrests all momentum, and it sort of ends the song on a bit of a low, really. It should have been a bit tighter to make a better song. So, what's the verdict? We Can't Dance is not a bad album. Heck, it's a good album, and I definitely rate it higher than Abacab, Calling Stations, and some of the early Gabriel albums like Nursery Crime. The biggest problem is that the album is too long. You could remove 3 or 4 songs very easily and trim the album to maybe 50-55 minutes, which you could make a lot more listenable. To conclude, I don't believe the album deserves as much hate as it gets, and while there are 2 or 3 songs which could easily be removed, No Son of Mine, Driving the Last Bike, and Dreaming While You Sleep, to name but a few, are as good as anything Genesis wrote in the late 1970s and deserve to be praised more than they currently are. Hope you enjoyed this episode, and I'll see you next time.